Hey, welcome to Surfcast. I'm glad you joined us today. This is a special episode, and in just a minute you'll realize why when we announce our guests. But first, in the studio with me after a long summer break, Christian Swear, our co-host of Surfcast. Welcome back, Christian.
Hey, Dr. Lam. Thank you.
I'm glad you joined us after having your summer in Cambodia and a little bit of study abroad, right?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Now, you're going to Cambridge in January.
I am, yes. You're full of adventure for me.
And graduating in May. Wow. But our guest today is who?
Okay, so our guest today is none other than the one and only Dr. Charles Paul Kahn, the president of Lee University himself.
He has been the president now for 34 years. He and his wife, Darlia, have been married for 52. He's the dad of three and papa of 10, but you know some other fun facts.
I do, yes. Dr. Kahn is also known globally as a writer, a speaker, and a world-class educator. He's done some really cool stuff in the academic sector. He has authored and co-authored 20 books.
Hey, Christian, have you read 20 books in your college career?
You know what, Dr. Lam? I don't really want to talk about it.
That's awesome. But here's what we will talk about. If you stick around, you're going to find out what Dr. Paul Kahn's favorite food is. We'll be right back. Hey, and we're back. So welcome to Surfcast, Dr. Kahn. Glad you joined us.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much.
So now, here's a reality about your presidency. You've been incredibly successful as president. It's been marked by a very long season of success. We realize, and you make reference to this often, that a constant for that success has been obviously God. But on the personal side, what are some disciplines or decisions that you had to make early on to help establish you for this effectiveness that we've all enjoyed?
Well, that's very kind of you. You know, people have had different views of my presidency at different times. So, you know, one of the values of staying around a long time, I guess, is people forgive you your mistakes, and remember your successes. But, you know, I think if I had to identify one principle for me personally, may not be this way for all presidents, is that nobody can do everything well simultaneously. There are some people who seem to do a lot of things well, but not simultaneously. And that one of the greatest assets one can have is focus, the advantage of focus. And so I have, from the day I became president, I was all in. And it has required that, you know, the job has required that. I was on the faculty for 15 years before I became president. I loved being on the faculty. I loved teaching. Psychology is my discipline. I still love teaching psychology. Loved being with students. Really, standpoint of pure personal satisfaction, enjoyed that part of my career more than these last 30 plus years. But I was totally into it. And I used to write books and travel and speak and give motivational speeches and so on. When I became president, I just wiped all that out. I took my calendar with all my appointments and started calling people and canceling because I wanted to be totally focused on the job. Lee at that time was 960 students the last semester before I became president. So it wasn't like looking back, it doesn't look like that big a job. So many of the things that I worry about now, we didn't have then. So there's sort of more to wrap your arms around. But I knew that I needed to do it 101%, and I always have. And I haven't had room in my life for much else other than Lee and my family, and that's been enough.
Well, I think you've modeled that well for us.
Yeah, Dr. Kahn, you've obviously found your calling in life as a university educator and as our president. How did you know that this is what you were supposed to be doing? You know, what advice do you have for my fellow students at Lee that maybe can't seem to find their life's calling?
Well, you know, I don't know how to give advice because every path is so particular, so unique. But I'll tell you a couple of things that I have always done. I've always ask God to open the next door. I would have never dreamed of being a college president, being the president of Lee. All those years I was on the faculty at Lee. I was never a dean. I was never a vice president. I had been a department chair for 3 years and actually resigned a department chair because I just didn't like the administrative part of it. And so I bailed on that after 3 years. I did become vice president for the last couple of years before I became president, but it was kind of an apprenticeship for being president. But, you know, I've always just tried to ask the Lord to point me in the right direction. I don't know how to explain that very well. That's like, how do you know you're in love? Well, you know, how do you know you're in love? But my wife has always been a part of this. While students at Lee, we didn't actually get serious about one another in a romantic sense until the semester before I graduated. You know, the last semester we were here, we knew one another while we were at Lee. We were friends. We were in a choir together. But I was a friend with her brother, you know, that sort of thing. But we didn't ever actually get connected as a couple sort of until a few months before graduation. But from the time we first started to think about our lives together, we didn't know what lay out there, but we both had a feeling that we were called to serve the work of God and that we would take that a step at a time. So the question of do you take the offer that pays the best or looks most comfortable or is more exciting? Well, you try, and this is hard for any of us to do at any stage in our lives. You try to say, okay, I'm going to try to do that thing that I think God makes me feel strongly about. So that's the thing we've always done. When I came back to teach at Lee, I made a commitment for 2 years and was very careful to say, I'm not going to stay longer than 2 years because going back to teach at Lee is not the kind of thing I wanted to do. But they were starting a psychology major. They had no PhD in psychology. I was getting a PhD in psychology. So I came for a couple of years. It turned out I was on the psychology faculty for 15 years. When I became president, I said, 5 years. I'll be president 5 years if they want me that long. The average length of a Lee College or Lee University presidency is actually less than 5 years. At the time I became president, there had only been one president who had been served for as much as 10 years, and he had served 12. Five sounded about right to me. My wife said, Paul, my feeling is it'll take 10. I think we'll be there 10 years. Okay. That's kind of how we started. As it turns out, it took a lot longer than that.
Just a bit.
So, but we were prepared, and we've been prepared at any point, and we're prepared at this point to move to the next thing if it seems to be what God has for us.
So in light of that, over the years, what do you think have been some of your greatest challenges as president? And then also some of the things that you kind of have celebrated or enjoyed the most? I mean, we could ask it this way. What do you like the most? What do you dislike the most? But, you know, kind of in challenges and things that you celebrate.
The things that have been the lowest moments have been moments when students have had terrible things happen in their lives. You know, you realize how little control you really do have. It's like being a parent. And, you know, we've lost students in tragic ways. And I remember every one of them. And I remember the details of some of those tragic events. And they just break your heart. You know, there's a chorus that we used to sing all the time in chapel, and every time we've sung it for the last 15 years, I think of this young man who was killed in a motorcycle accident right after chapel one day. Got on his motorcycle, went down to Walmart to meet his friends, and they were getting a couple of things. He comes roaring back up toward campus and had an accident, was killed. He was from Texas. Before I went out to conduct his funeral in Texas, this had happened right after chapel, as I said, and I first wanted to know, was he in chapel that day? Mm. And learned that he was in chapel that day. And so because of his friend, he had been with his friends, and I talked with some of them. They told me where they had been sitting. I went back and got the tape of that chapel to listen to it because I wanted to connect to whatever it was he heard last, you know. And there was this particular chorus that we sang at the end of that chapel that we sang a lot in those days. And, you know, we sang, I heard that chorus not long ago, and it just all comes back to me, this kid named Tyler. Things like that just, they're hard. Mm. And so those are the lowest points. And sometimes students will do self-destructive things. This wasn't one of them. Let me say he wasn't doing anything stupid. It was just a very tragic accident. A car stopped suddenly right in front of him. He left the road. But, you know, you happen to be aware sometimes of things students do that damage them. And those are the hardest times. You know, people talk about raising money being, you know, raising money is just a job. You know, you just go do it. Building buildings, you know, those are in fact kind of enjoyable because mm-hmm. you can see the progress. Watching students navigate the dangers, the hazards, the risk of life can sometimes really kind of take a toll on you.
Mm-hmm. So what about the positive? What are some of the things that you... you celebrate with so well, and you think, man, this was the moment I'm here.
Yeah. You know, I think so similar. If I tried to think, okay, what were my five biggest moments? You know, I think of the first time I ever visited our group in Cambridge, because it had been a dream of mine when I was in the faculty before I became president for Lee students to have an international studies experience, and Cambridge was the first one we put together, and I went over there to visit them that first year, and I'll never forget getting off the train in Cambridge and getting a taxi to a restaurant where I was going to meet them for lunch, and I was running a little late, and they were already in the restaurant, and they were all sitting in a window, kind of in where I could see them through the window. When I got out of the taxi, and I was half a block up the street, and I looked, and I see these 20 Lee students all sitting there together in this lovely little place in England. And I just stood there and just watched them for a few minutes because it was sort of, okay, yeah, this is worth working for. You know, here are these students who, we didn't just give them a plane ticket to London and throw them over there and say, you're on your own. You know, they're taking this little, you know, that we talk about the Lee bubble, this little miniature bubble of Lee. They got their friends, they got their faculty member, they got a little piece of the Lee culture, but it's kind of transplanted over here in this interesting place. That's really great stuff. I love moments like that. And so times when we've seen things happen for the first time, you know, the first batch of nursing majors, the pinning ceremony, you know, because that was the answer to, or it was the culminating point of individual dreams of students and of institutional dreams of Lee. So we dreamed of having a nursing program. These girls had dreamed, so many of them, I'm sure, of being nurses. And here we are together, and we're sort of actualizing these dreams. Those are rare experiences. Those are kind of scrapbook experiences.
My personal favorite is DEET Day, obviously, and the mm-hmm. service learning program. So talking about that, my question is, how do you, you've been very, very, very good over the years at seeing something that didn't really exist and then helping that to actually become a reality. So what is the process for that? I mean, how do you see something that isn't there and then all of a sudden, you know, like a Cambridge program, you're building a cross-cultural study, a service learning program, a number of academic majors. What? How do you do that? I mean, can you explain that for us?
Well, I don't know that I understand the process very well, but I can tell you when it comes to our service learning program, Deke Day, and the whole program, it was a long time dream because it's in the DNA of Lee. Lee, long before I ever got to Lee, when it was Lee College and it was a very modest, small place, there was a heart for service. And that was, in the earlier days, so strongly combined with evangelism and Christian outreach that it was sometimes indistinguishable. But still a heart for service, a desire to make a difference in the lives of other people. And that's always been a part of Lee. When I became president, we began thinking about how do you formalize this and create a structure that facilitates this and kind of brings together all these strands. The same thing with Global Perspectives, you know. We had students that were going places around the world, but we had never formalized it in a way that would then bring others in. So you take something like the service learning and the service experience, it's something that probably half the students at Lee would find some way to do something like this on their own through their local church, through some club on campus or some other organization. But half probably wouldn't, you know. So you're trying to formalize it and create structure in a way that lets students experience it. We don't really know what food we like when we've never tasted it before, you know. You don't ever, some things have to be acquired, you know, but many tastes are latent, you know. The first time you have that new thing you've never tried before, you think, I love this stuff. This is great. Where can I get some more of this? I think service is that way. I think international travel is that way. In a more general way, accomplishment is that way, achievement. So you take students that have a latent appetite that's never been aroused or stimulated to do good things for other people. You know, giving is a lot that way, and although it sounds like just another way to ask for money, but you know, giving is enjoyable. For people with means, so often they've never really given big money, even though they have big money. They've learned that it really is enjoyable to acquire money, so they've done a lot of that. The question is, have they ever experienced giving money? And when they do, they've realized, you know, this is as much fun as acquiring it. Mm-hmm. And I think serving is a similar thing.
Dr. Khan, you spoke earlier about the hardship of watching students at Lee go through struggles and the joy of watching them succeed. You've mentioned to us as a student body before that a lot of times you feel like we're all your children. And I love that. That's so endearing. And the way that you spoke about it just now reminded me of that, reminds me of this father role that you can sometimes assume with us. You know, we're kind of like your flock. And I think a lot of times this is language that we hear a pastor use with their congregation. And so my question is there a necessity for the leader of a Christian institution like yourself to make a distinction between leading and pastoring? Is there a necessity to make that distinction? And if so, how do you do it?
Well, you know, my quick answer would be no, there's not a necessity, and not everybody has to feel that way. And you can be a really effective president without feeling that way. And there are a lot of different moves in the dance and a lot of different ways to be a president and to be an effective president. I'm going with our women's soccer team this weekend, for example, to play at a place in Michigan where I happened to know the last two presidents of that school quite well. And they've both been such effective presidents, and I'm looking forward to visiting with them. But, you know, they've done it. They did this, they presidented this same school so differently. So some people are kind of operations people. You know, they make the trains run on time. They create the structures. They empower people who provide the nurture. And it's not necessary for them to feel nurturing, I don't think, or to be sensed as being nurturing. But then there are other people I've seen presidents. That's a part of their the way they communicate and connect, and it's natural to them, and it's not forced, and it's not kind of reading it out of the president's manual. Act fatherly. You know, and so it works for them. I have a brother who was a college president, an excellent. I used to tease him. He's now retired. I used to tease him and say he was the second best college president in America, and he was president at. He retired as president of Western Oregon University. Before that, he was at Dickinson State University in North Dakota. Terrific president. I was only teasing when I said he was the second best college president. He might have been the best college president. But, you know, I would honestly say that I visited him everywhere. He was also the chancellor at the University of Tennessee Martin. But, and that the chancellor is what they call their CEO there. So he's three places as a top guy, all moderate-sized state universities. I don't think I ever saw him in a fatherly role. I visited him those places. He did a terrific job. I don't think he, however, took it as personally as I do. I think he was more, and I say this in total respect, you know, he was more of a mechanic in the sense that he knew how to get the job done. And he got the job done, and he was a very effective president. But it was never the sort of personal thing that it was for me. And I think part of this is personality. Part of it is that I actually did have children in our student body from the second or third year I was president. My oldest child became a student, and so I go from having my children here to having my grandchildren here. And so it's just sort of I also started when it was very small. I think if I became president of Lee now at 5,000 students, I might take a very different approach to the job. But, you know, you come in here, there's fewer than 1,000 students. You do get to where you know most of them. It feels pretty personal. Then it kind of grows. And so this pastoral side, it was, I think, a natural result of when I became president, what was going on in my life. I had been a youth pastor, but I've seen other presidents that didn't seem to have that, and they were terrific presidents.
So a few minutes ago, you talked about the idea of, you know, your work here and your family and your faith. So when life is getting busier and busier, you know, you're going to go on this trip with the soccer team, and then you're going to be back to campus with all you have to do. How do you balance this idea of work, family, faith, and rest? And what are some secrets that you could share with us that are in the flow of this busy lifestyle and ways that we can endure a long, successful journey like you have by understanding the value of balance? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I wish I could hear a more thoughtful and insightful person than I am answer that question, because I'd love to know. And especially if there's a secret, you use the word secret. If there's a secret, I'd sure love to have it. But I don't know. I honestly don't know how to answer that. You know, I have a wife who shares every step of the way, mm-hmm. cares as much about it as I do, feels that it's a calling, has never had a career outside of Lee. She has been a piano, owned a piano faculty here at Lee and company students. But it's not like I have to share a life with a woman who then is a, you know, a CPA and works for a accounting firm in Chattanooga, or, you know, is doing something else. So I don't have to do that kind of balancing. So we're sort of, it's natural for us to be all in all the time together. That's a huge advantage. I have to try to find ways to unplug, disconnect. I'm not sure I'm particularly good at that. You may be asking entirely the wrong person. I got to say, social media and the cell phones and all that have made it a lot harder to disconnect and unplug. So I think that's one of the things I do least well. And I'm really honestly not a good person to be offering advice on that. My wife might hear this and say, why would you possibly think you know anything about balance? You know?
That's funny.
Well, Dr. Khan, along those lines, I know you said you're not the best at unplugging or disconnecting, but I've wanted to know since my freshman year, and so many of my fellow students have, what do you do for fun when you can find moments to unplug and disconnect?
You know, the things that I do purely for pleasure, just this last weekend, college football. I love football. I said to my wife this weekend, because it's the first weekend, I don't know when this will be out there, but it was the first weekend of the college football season. And I piled up in front of the TV for several hours and watched college football. I said to her, I so wish some president of Lee had started football. because I love college football, and wouldn't it be wonderful if Lee had it? But I enjoy that. I enjoy running and in more recent days walking more with my wife. I have a daughter who is, in fact, on the administrative team here at Lee who is a runner. She's the one that got me started running. When her babies were little babies and would sleep in the morning, we ran, you know, before daylight, four mornings a week for 10 or 11 years. And the way I got started running, I was living in Boston. I was doing a semi-sabbatical. I was up in Boston at the time. She had done her first 5K. She knew I got out and ran just to relieve stress and to kind of stay fit. She said, Dad, I just did a 5K and it was great fun. You got to come do one with me. And I said, honey, that's ridiculous. Why would you pay $20 to put a number on your shirt to go out on the same street you can run on for free and do it with a bunch of people when you don't, you know, why would you do that? If I want to run 5K, I'll go out and run 5K. I don't need the sanction of some organizing body. She said, Dad, that's exactly the way I thought. Trust me, you'll love it. Go do a race with me, you'll love it. So I was trying to get her to come up and visit me. Said, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you'll come visit me, we'll run a race up here. Races all around the Boston area. She said, okay, if I find a 5K in Boston, I'll sign us up for it, and I'll come up, we'll run the 5K, and I'll spend the weekend. Great, it's a good deal. That's how I got started running. She did that. She found, a 10K, signed us up for it. I went with her. She was right. I loved it. We ran together for over 10 years, and we did 5Ks mostly and 10Ks and then the half marathons, finally marathons. And, you know, going back to what's restful, what's fun, I enjoyed that so much. We quit doing it because at some point her kids got to the age that she couldn't slip out of the house early in the morning. But, you know, running along in the dark with a grown daughter whom you love and whom you enjoy talking with, doing that 4 days a week, it's wonderful. I miss it so much. And so I've always, going all the way back to there, probably about 20 years ago, I've always run a lot. I used to play racket sports. I don't do it very much anymore. I have a tennis court at my home. We built these racquetball courts here in the DeVos Rec Center, so we could play racquetball over lunch. It wasn't for the students at all. I almost put a no students allowed. So, you know, I've done a little of that. I've never been an athlete, but I enjoy that sort of casual stuff.
Let's talk food. So if you could only eat one dish for the rest of your life, what would that dish be?
Well, if I could have a couple of egg sandwiches for dinner, if I had to choose one dinner, yeah, give me a couple of egg sandwiches. Just a nicely fried egg with a little lettuce, tomato, and pickle.
Runny or hard yolk?
Pardon?
Runny or hard yolk in that fried egg?
The hard yolk in the sandwich. Yeah, you don't want the runny to, you know, run down your elbow. Mm. You got to pick this up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now if it's
you're right.
Yeah, if it's on a plate, maybe you go a little softer.
Okay.
So and if you're a good old Southern boy like me and you have grits, then you make it as soft as you want to because you stir it all up and let the. Where are you from?
I'm from South Louisiana.
Oh, so you know all about grits.
I do.
Oh yeah, so you let the grits not get you. But if you're going to put it on a sandwich, you got to go ahead and break the yolk.
Okay, good to know. Thank you. I will take that under advisement.
So maybe whenever Dr. Cobb visits you in Cambridge, Christian.
Oh, sure, yeah.
An egg sandwich, sure.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. I'll see you in a few months.
That's good. Dr. Khan. It's Dr. Khan, right? Dr. Khan, can we? That's what I was trying to say. Dr. Khan, can we move now to kind of the last comments of this episode today? And what would you want to share with anybody listening? We've got a ton of folks that listen to us. Recently, we looked at it, and we have traction in about 36 countries, 46 states. Mm-hmm. We just hit 10,000 downloads and 300,000 plus feed hits. All that to say, we know people are listening.
Great.
So across the globe, what would you want people to know about education, the value of education, leadership, faith, service, whatever's on your heart? What would you share?
Education is more than learning how to do stuff. It's more than a head trip. You've got a lot of places around the world, and certainly a lot of places in America, where you can learn how to do accounting, for example. But an education is learning not just how to do accounting, but how to be an accountant. And why would you even be attracted to accounting, and what are you going to do with the life that it provides for you, and where does it all fit into some larger picture and design? You know, education is about answering those big questions, not just the small questions. Now, you got to learn, you know, if you don't want to be an accountant who doesn't know how to do accounting.
Sure.
But so I think about education, the kind of education we're trying to participate in here at Lee is really a big picture kind of education. Prepare students to compete at the next level with the best people in the world, but prepare them also to do it thoughtfully and with a strategic sense about their own lives, and with a big picture in view of how these things all fit together into a life that God has designed for them. And that's pretty ambitious objective for education. But I think that's education at its best.
Yeah, Dr. Khan, we really appreciate those insights. You know, it's been an absolute honor to sit in the room with you today and to hear more of these insights about service and service learning that you have. I find that a lot of the faculty and staff at Lee are often deeply engaged in service to the student body and to the wider community. And it's something that I've had the privilege to engage in and learn from all of the faculty and staff at Lee. And it's really sparked a passion for service within me. So what do you think it is about Lee that fosters this culture of servant leadership?
Well, I think at Lee, it's drawn directly from our faith. Now, I know lots of people are serious about service who do not have a specific kind of theological or faith-based reason for it. I respect that. and some of the most admirable lives that have ever been lived are lives that have been lived in service to others, which don't explicitly rise from the foundation of faith. I understand that. But for us, it does, and it arises so naturally. And to me, the, you know, a lot of crazies in religion, a lot of wackos. Religion is pretty powerful stuff, and it can express itself in some pretty absurd ways. And sometimes the greater culture and a secular culture tends to see that in religion. But what religion, but what, when faith produces action in a coherent way, then that it can be a very, very powerful thing. So I think the logical extension of our faith in Jesus Christ is to serve others, to give a cup of water in Jesus' name, and not just not to give the cup of water, but also not to give the cup of water without attaching it to the mandates of Christ. So I think here at Lee, people get that. And so many of my faculty colleagues and faculty who have taught you could have gone other places where they would maybe made a little more money, maybe had a little more status, maybe, you know, more of a name brand school. But they've come to Lee because they really do believe in this combination. In the same way that you and many of your fellow students have done that. That is, you could have, you know, fill in those same blanks. You could have gone to some place where it would cost a little less, had a little more status, been a little better known. But I think so many of our students are drawn here because they want these pieces of their life to fit together. And so I love working here. I love being here. I can't imagine being anywhere else because of that combination in the lives of my colleagues on the faculty and in the lives of our students.
Dr. Khan, I know you're very busy, and I really appreciate you taking time to come in. Remember Christian egg sandwich when he gets to Cambridge.
Oh, and I'll be emailing you.
Maybe invite him for a short run over there. He's done it before. Hey, guys, thank you for listening to us on Servcast. As always, remember, you're made for more. Go out and make a difference in somebody else's life today. Have a great day. Until next time.